Upon the last of February 1661, which was about a month before he died, at the close of a large testimony he gave to the work of Reformation. These were his words after he had been speaking of suffering for Christ. "Blessed soul," said he, "who loves not his life to death, for on such rests the Spirit of glory and of God," 1 Peter 4:14. But we cannot say, "But this is a day of darkness and a day of blasphemy and rebuke. The Lord hath covered himself with a cloud in his anger. We looked for peace, but behold evil. Our souls rejoiced when his majesty did swear the covenant of God and put thereto his seal and subscription, and after confirmed it by his royal promise, so that the subject's mind blessed the Lord and rested upon the healing word of a prince. But now, alas, the contrary is enacted by law, the carved work broke down, ordinances defaced, so that we are brought to the former bondage and chaos of prelatical confusions and anarchy, and the royal prerogative due to Christ pulled off his head. We have seen days of sorrow, and have just cause to fear we be made to read and eat that book wherein is written lamentation and mourning and woe. But we are to believe that Christ will not so depart from the land, but a remnant shall be saved, and he shall reign a victorious, conquering king to the ends of the earth. Oh, that there were nations, kindreds, tongues, and all the people of Christ's habitable world, encompassing his throne with cries and tears, for the spirit of supplication promised to be poured upon the inhabitants of Judah for that effect." Thus he closed his testimony. I shall only add another passage to this purpose, about 2 hours and a half before he was removed. Amongst other things he spake, which did relish of heaven, and refreshed the souls of all that heard them, he had this expression: "I do no ways doubt of it, but Christ will arise and wound his enemies in their loins." This was only taken, but the observer faith, he had many to the same purpose. Now this was that very night, wherein the act Recessory was passed, as if God, who had taken notice of such an high affront done to him, would let his dying servant know, to the end he might communicate it to others, that he would not only repeal that act, but that he would rescind the rescinders. A wound in the loins, when the blow is given by the hand of him who is God Almighty, must prove mortal. If he wound them there, they must fall, though they were stronger than lions. For who may stand before him when once he is angry? The men of might will not find their hands when the party they engage with is the omnipotent God, when men are become so high that they are too hard a party for any on earth to deal with. If their way be contrary to him, then they fall directly in his hand to deal with them. And it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. He is such a party as thou canst neither fight nor flee. Oh, Scotland, Scotland, if thou wouldst yet think on thy way and remember this before he come to enter the lists with thee, who quickly puts his enemies out of a posture of defense. Oh, if thou would yet kneel before him whom God hath made king in Zion and kiss the Son, lest he be angry. For if he be angry, thou must perish. And there is no way to prevent this, but to remember from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works. As for the letters themselves, I shall not offer to commend them. They had letters of recommendation deeply engraven on the hearts of all who have seen them and can savor the things that are of God. This they had, I say, amongst them who have their senses exercised to discern good and evil long before they were made thus public in the world. So they need not my commendation, nor will the detraction of any who have a mind for that blast their repute. As they are above the one, so they despise the other. But sure I am, this may be said, that if thou hast any acquaintance with the sweet breathings of the Spirit of God, if thou hast ever seen by tasting how good he is, or hast found what soul anguish doth follow upon the hiding of his face from a person who hath placed his satisfaction so entirely in the light of his countenance lifted up upon the soul that the man cannot enjoy himself when he doth not enjoy him, but carries as one deprived of all that which made life more desirable than death. If thou be such, I say, when thou wilt find somewhat here to take thee, here thou wilt perceive both these conditions set before thine eye and exemplified in an eminent saint. Thou wilt both find what a heaven the saints have or is to be had in this side of glory, and how as a sensible presence makes them forget all their sorrows, so a felt absence doth embitter all their other enjoyments. In general, I may say this of these epistles, and it may be after thou hast perused them, thou wilt seal it, that thou hast many volumes wrapped up together in a few words, a great soul shut up in a little body, much of the marrow of real religion enclosed in every line. If thou be only taken and delighted with abstruse and high-flown notions which have not a native connection with inflaming the heart with love to God, but are rather the ignis fatas of the age, being for the most part smoke for light, or at best a dim flash rising out of the darkened understanding of men, whose light, till they be illuminate from above, as it arises out of a dark dungeon, so it leads to destruction. And instead of directing the man who follows it to a place of rest, it leads him to the pit, and leaves him there to perish. If thou be taken, I say, with such kind of stuff, I shall not bid thee, but I know thou wilt go elsewhere. But if thou be one who loves not to feed upon ashes, and hast no mind to fill thy belly with that east wind, which instead of nourishment produceth nothing but much torment in the inward parts, I know thou wilt welcome this peace as that which hath both meat and medicine for thy soul in it. Here thou wilt meet with one warmed with the love of God, shining and reflecting heat upon all that are about him, letting thee know from his own experience what is to be found in a fellowship with God, and desirous of nothing so much as that thou and others may share with him in that same love, which is better than life, and be partakers of that same blessedness which made him boast of God all the day, and bless himself in his afflicted lot. He would have thee taste of that which made him cheerful under the cross, and put him in case not only to look, but to laugh all his troubles out of countenance. And if thou wilt but converse with him a little, it may be, thou wilt find thy heart burn within thee while thou talkest with this warm soul, whose words seem, as they drop, to cast a fire in the affections and set the heart in a flame. The author in his other writings, which have always a special tincture of holiness, for even in following the most abstruse notion and apparently remote from practice, thou wilt still perceive him, spirari sanctitatem. He is much above many men. But in these, how low soever at the first look they may appear, he is above himself, being often, either as a man elevate above the pitch of mortality and caught up already into the choir of angels, or as an angel come down amongst men, showing the inhabitants of this lower world somewhat of that which will be still a great secret while we are here. These, what a life they live, who see God as he is, and enjoy him. For the subject matter thou wilt meet with in these epistles, I shall not say much. There is a sweet and pleasant variety of purpose to be found in them, whereof thou canst only expect a just account by a perusal of the whole. But mostly thou wilt find these things insisted on. 1. What high spring tides of joy and consolation did fill and overflow the soul of this sufferer, so as sometimes ye have him expressing himself as pained with a surcharge of love, O rare and blessed disease. And having nothing else to seek, there are earnest longings after a more capacious soul, to contain more of that infinite ocean, which hath neither brim nor bottom. This is the gain of one who can suffer the loss of all things for Christ. This is the cool, refreshing shade that they find in the furnace, which not only keeps the fire of affliction from scorching them or consuming them into ashes, but makes it a more desirable lot than what others account the best of lives. The soul amidst these flames, being admitted to such a nearness with God as causeth joy to overflow all its banks and perfumes the heart with delight, is so far from complaining because of the fiery trial that the cross of Christ is more desirable to it than a crown. And since it is there, where next to heaven his people enjoy most of himself, it makes them sing sweetly amidst all the outward sorrows that befall them, and puts them in case to command a concert of music within, while others in their fool's paradise laugh as they list, have sadness at their heart, and find themselves pierced through with many sorrows. 2. Ye have sometimes a felt emptiness, for this a full feast is not, or cannot be, the ordinary diet. It may well be the extraordinary dessert of the people of God, while they walk by faith and not by sight. The constancy of that joy, as well as the fullness of it, is reserved for the chamber of presence. No saint, how eminent soever, even in suffering for Christ, can expect that all tears shall be wiped from his eyes till he come to that land where all the inhabitants have everlasting joy upon their heads, and where he will be put beyond hazard of sinning, as well as without the reach of suffering. There is sometimes a felt emptiness, I say, that casts into a fever of desires. That river of God is full of water, which did overflow and refresh the soul, running again into that sea whence it came. And in this low ebb, ye see how the patient is pained with absence, and what a panting there is for a sensible presence. The soul, as it were, is evaporate in such wishes as these. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? Or, oh, when shall I come and appear before thee, and be put once for all and forever beyond the fear of the arising of any cloud to eclipse the light of thy countenance? The soul in this absence is scorched with the fever and flame of burning desires. But to keep it from being burnt up, there is hope. This holds the soul in life, that it expire not. This saves from swooning and preserves from sinking into despondency. And though while hope is deferred, the heart be sick, yet there is ease in this very pain, for an unerring expectation of a future good yields a present ease to the expectant and makes the man give himself the check thus. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? This sickness was never yet unto death, but ever to the glory of God. Therefore hope thou in him, for I shall yet praise him. In a word, that which is principally insisted upon in these short summaries of a communion with God is this: on the one hand, how a hungry and longing soul is filled and feasted with the consolations of God, and when in that posture, how puzzled and nonplussed as to what to think or say of God, it knows not what to do, or how to lay out itself for him, the satisfaction that it hath in him, and the obligation it sees itself under to him, making it look on everything it doth for him, saith or thinketh of him, with a kind of regret and holy dissatisfaction. It doth not please itself in pleasing him, and though he accept what love offers, yet love desiderates so much in the offering that it presents all with a blush, and suitable to this amiable and orderly confusion of spirit, its greatest oratory and eloquence is a kind of abrupt, concise, and broken discourse. It is most desirous to speak, but not knowing what to say, which is not unworthy of him, it falls into silent admiration, and yet something it must say, wherein, though it do not please itself, yet it makes good sense before him, and is a most pleasant melody in his ears. It is then when he seems to be so taken with that, wherein the soul finds so many failings and defects, that he says, "Speak on. Let me see that blushing countenance. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely." And truly thou mayest perceive much of this kind of discourse in these epistles, whereto the holy writer was so habituate in these soliloquies with God, which were ordinary to him in his retirement, that his pen and preaching did ever after keep the tincture, and had the relish of that. For while many preached notions, and some spake because they believed, he was perceived oftentimes not so much to speak as believing, as seeing. His being so long in the mount of God made his face to shine ever thereafter in his public appearances. And there was some peculiar sweetness in his phrase, especially in crying up and commending the love of Christ, in mentioning the joy of the Holy Ghost, or the glory of the life to come, beyond what was to be found even with other holy men. Neither was it among the dry schoolmen, nor at Aristotle's feet, though there were few in the age so well acquaint with either, that he learned this. Nay, flesh and blood did not, nor could not reveal it unto him. He was a student above the clouds, and there it was where he learned these metaphysics. This, I say, is the thing upon the one hand which is insisted upon, and on the other, thou hast the sad condition of a soul deprived of these sweet enjoyments. He who was just now taken into the banqueting house and had the banner of love for his canopy hath that spiced wine which his soul was drinking with delight snatched out of his hand, and sits panting for a drop of the rivers of his pleasure, wherein not long ago he was bathing himself. whereupon follows a night of sorrow in the soul, because the sun that did illuminate and warm it with its rays is set. Then, as if the soul would break forth at many passages together for haste to be after him who hath withdrawn himself, it runs out at the eyes in tears and at the mouth in complaints because of his absence. Yet faith sets down the fainter upon the brink of the river and puts him under an arrest that he run not away till the sea flow again. And desire makes him look out with a watery eye as impatient of delay, the inward echo of the heart in the meantime being still this: how long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long? And while he is in this posture, ye would not know him to be the man that a few minutes since he was, and a few minutes hence he may and will be. And no wonder, since that is wanting and away, which was the health of his countenance, that he look pale, as the weeping man's eye, being blinded with water, cannot take up objects as they are, especially if they be at any distance. So ye have this holy man in these heavy hours venting his jealousies, and because of withdrawing, giving way to his sorrow. Now, as the joy of enjoying God is by the former made clear to be of all the greatest, for under these full manifestations the soul may be transported to such an ecstasy of delight that for the time, whether in the body or out of the body, the man knows not, so the sorrow for being deprived of that, the giver seeing it necessary to withhold and suspend these manifestations, knowing that heaviness for a season through manifold temptations is fit for these who are sons of consolation, and who shall have a few days hence an everlasting year of jubilee, is of all sorrows seen to be the sorest and sharpest. This is soul anguish, and so least of any supportable, because it makes the very spirit which, if it were found, would sustain a man's infirmities, sink under it. While it is thus with him, ye may perceive that his bed cannot comfort him, nor his couch ease his complaint. And in this fever there are some expressions dropped, which after the height is over he doth retract as rash and unadvised, and upon more mature deliberation is made to say, "This was my infirmity." And truly, he who intendeth the advantage of the whole, in his way of dealing with every member of that body whereof he is head, hath excellently ordered this matter, that they who have the fullest feasts of joy, and are admitted to the nearest fellowship upon the earth, to the end that pride may be hid from their eyes, have ordinarily the deepest downcastings. These warm hours and hot blinks of a sensible presence are often followed with a sharp shower and a dark night of bitter desertion, so that if poor souls in reading these should begin to think or say, "Alas! We are sparingly dealt with. We are great strangers to such a favorite's feast." Let them consider also, besides, that he was an ambassador now in bonds, and so his master allowed liberally upon him, that their soul anguish is short of his, and so if they consider his condition well, they will see that though he had much, yet he had nothing over. And if they take notice of the mercy that is in their own, they will perceive also that though they have a little, yet they have no lack. For he abounds towards his in all wisdom and prudence. There is a third condition spoken frequently to in these epistles also, which lies in the middle betwixt these two, and that is such a communion with God as consists in the soul's being well pleased with Him and being most desirous to please Him in all things, abstracting from these extraordinary transports of joy upon the one hand, and free likewise of these deep downcastings upon the other. And this is the more ordinary way of the saints, whose daily exercise it is to come and take out their directions from their master, and endeavor to walk according to these, both as men who are still under the master's eye, and as those who must give an account of themselves to him. In which service they want not their own sweet peace, for the way wherein they walk is a way of pleasantness, and all these paths are peace. Though it be not such an overflowing peace as amounts to a joy unspeakable and full of glory. So full joy is nothing else but peace, swelling without its ordinary channel and overflowing all its banks. And on the other hand, they want not their own checks and challenges. They are often before God with the tear in their eye, and know what it is to sigh because of a body of death within them, because of that law which is in their members, warring against that law which is in their mind, and bringing them into captivity to the law of sin which is in their members. Yet this is short of the sorrow of some dear to him who are made to roar by reason of the disquietness of their heart, and to cry out of the arrows of the Almighty striking within them, and the poison thereof drinking up their spirit, so that while they suffer this, they are with wise Heman almost distracted. These things, I say, are mainly insisted upon, which according to an epistolary method lie scattered in several parcels up and down the book, in reading whereof thou wilt easily perceive also that though the whole of these epistles may be of singular use to a Christian in every condition, yet a great many of them have a more special reference both to the comfort and the carriage of a Christian under the cross, whether his affliction be outward trouble or inward soul exercise and terror, where he is most frequently to be found, which is all I have to say for the matter. There are not a few in this generation, I know, who will make it their business and think of their interest to derogate from the esteem which these epistles do justly challenge, and will readily get from all who know how to prize things according to their worth, as knowing very well that what respect these get and gain amongst readers they lose. Though I may truly say, and they will at last find it so, that if they get the thing they seek by this artifice, they lose by that getting. And I may assure myself also, if these either find thee a Christian or make thee such, they may well lose by this labor any esteem thou hadst for them, but they will not proselyte thee to their profane contempt of so spiritual matter. Yet I know they will essay it. First, somewhat to this purpose may be said, and will be suggested by them, that here is a needless and nauseating repetition of the same thing, though it may be they are not so displeased that it is said often, as that it is said at all. Or if the frequency of it offend them, it is out of a fear that what is often said be once listened to and at last learned. I grant that the same matter and purpose is divers times touched and insisted upon, but consider, One, that this is to diverse persons, and is there either reason or religion in it, to envy him the liberty of telling all the fearers of God to whom he writes what was done for his soul, or the people of God, the advantage of that relation? Was it not for the edification of the church that all who had heard of his persecution for the gospel should hear also that the world do their worst? Cannot make a sufferer truly miserable, while God makes him happy in a communion with himself. The heat of persecution may dry up or embitter all the nether springs, but then the soul hath free access to the upper, and is admitted to drink, yea, drink abundantly of these rivers of his pleasure. This is the spiced wine he drinks, and the meat he gets to eat in secret, which the world knoweth not of, and cannot take from him. And having found how sweet to the taste this bread of God, which comes down from heaven, is, he cannot forbear to tell others how he is feasted, to excite desires in all to come and share with him in these dainties, and forbear to surfeit themselves with the world's deceitful meat. 2. Consider that it is at divers times, and surely he, finding the consolations of God new every morning and abounding every moment, it had been a piece of base ingratitude in him to have made mention of that but once, which God had given him often. 3. Consider, though the same matter be often mentioned, yet it is mostly with a sweet and taking variety of phrase. He brings forth the old and new together. Nay, there is ever so much new in it as may contribute to kindle new desires in thee, in order to the satisfaction of thy own soul, to seek what he found. And when thou hast fallen upon that, and art filled with it, thy practice in telling it over to others will without doubt have such a coincidency with his as will justify what he hath done, and thou wilt then judge that an apology for publishing and frequent proclaiming the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living is either wholly superfluous, or it doth suppose the reader not to be a Christian, at least in case. Secondly, something will be said by malicious mutterers, I know, against the apparent coarseness of some phrases and commonness of some words made use of by the author, who all along sets himself to make use of the most ordinary expressions which are in use among the common sort of people. Something I say of this kind may probably be belched forth by this carping, criticizing, profane, and prejudicate age. But if they would remember what was said by men much more knowing than themselves, and more able to discern what ought to be spoken, both as to matter and words, to the commendation of Plautus, who made use of the most common words that were in use amongst the most common sort of people in Rome. See Ipsa Musa. La quarento, ora platino, uter entur. They would see reason rather to commend a dexterous making use of common phrases in writing to people of no extraordinary capacity than take, because of this, any occasion to quarrel at or cry down that which is so useful and excellent. And if in the opinion of men faithful and famous in their generation, he be the best preacher to a people, and consequently writer too. Qui, quam maxime trivialiter, puriliter, populariter, duce, as to words and phrases. I see no great reason such have to carp, or necessity I have to make an apology. But there is sufficient to be said, if not for silencing of babblers, whose tongues hath more dimensions than their reason, which makes it not worth the while to take notice of their barking, yet for satisfying of the more sober-minded. 1. Consider that this disciple learned of his master, both so to write and speak, as not to hide his purpose in a cloud of new coined words. He consulted his own reputation so little while he sought his master's honor, that he would rather seem a babbler to them who minded nothing but words, than a barbarian to the meanest, who was taken with spiritual matter. If Christ's example, who taught these high and heavenly mysteries of salvation by plain and obvious similitudes, be not sufficient to silence such persons who have habituate their tongue to drop satires against what is good, whether persons or things, yet it is enough to guard against the prejudice of what they take liberty to say. 2. Consider that the most common words and ordinary phrases in use amongst a people may by the greatest orator be very pertinently used for illustrating and pressing his purpose. Nay, in some cases these have a special emphasis beyond what can be wrapped up in a great many more compt words and seemingly neat expressions. And then they are so far from being a blemish to a discourse that they seem to give a kind of life and add a certain luster to the whole frame. And thou wilt find it often fall out here that the author hath so happy a dexterity in making the most common and sometimes contemptible phrase with a graceful sweetness subservient to his purpose, that let the greatest master of words alter but one of these words, or change one of these expressions, which, if they stood not there, might almost seem a barbarism, he mars what he undertook to mend, and while he endeavors to correct the author, he leaves himself to be put in amongst the errata. 3. Consider that a great many of the persons to whom he wrote were no scholars, nay, had so little acquaintance with that which passeth in the world for elegancy of speech, that he had as good have said nothing at all to them as had made use of any other words than what are pitched upon in expressing his purpose. And so his design, being to make affection, or to move it in the hearts of those to whom he wrote, there was a necessity to suit his style to their capacity, which condescension in him is yet managed with so much spiritual prudence and discretion as it is without debasing high matter or giving the least rational ground to mock at spiritual mysteries. Yea, I may say further that there is so much majesty in the strain, as that the lowness of the style is abundantly thereby made up. And further, I might ask thee, if thou who makest the challenge dost pretend to be a master of reason, whether he is the best orator who can with the least noise cast fire into the affections of those to whom he speaks or writes, and bring down the highest mysteries in religion to the capacity of the meanest hearer and reader, or he who wraps up plain truths and obvious purposes in such an obscurity of phrase and perplexing intricacy of words as carries the matter quite beyond the reach of a vulgar capacity, without making any other impression upon the mind of the hearer than that the man hath forgotten his message, and while he seeks himself, slights his master's business. It often creates also a suspicion that the writer or speaker either desires not to be understood, or while he endeavors to soar too high above others, that he hath fallen into such a confusion as he knows not where to find himself. And if thou concede here what with reason thou canst not deny, thou hast granted all against thyself which I need seek for putting thee to silence. 4. Consider that though there be some here written to of the greatest quality in the nation, and a great many others, who are eminent for their understanding and parts, as well as their grace, yet as these of the greatest quality and parts may reap advantage by what has been written to the meanest and most obscure person, God in his providence led his servant to speak to these of understanding and parts, so that what was particularly intended for them might be of special use and advantage to every one. And thus all occasion of carping is taken away, unless, amongst the rest of regularities of this time, the episcopal authority be interposed to make us read and understand that axiom backward. Bonum quo communius eo melius, which, if it be, I have no more to say, but that it is of a piece with the rest of their reformation. I suppose by this time it may be thought I have said too much upon this head, since it would seem that some things ought rather to be said for making many things in them plain that are mysterious and dark, than to say so much for taking off prejudice because of some common words and expressions. But as to that, I shall not undertake it, for there are many things in them only intelligible by tasting. And he who wants that commentary will never understand this text. I have no more to say, either for the one or the other, but if any dislike them, he may let them alone, for I intend to obtrude them upon none who distaste them. Yet I cannot forbear to advise even such, so far to consult their own reputation, as by speaking against what the author hath here written, not to discover that secret to the world, that they are persons void of a gracious principle, to whom the things that are of God are unsavory. The wind of thy mouth, accompanied with all the venom thou canst vomit up, will not blast the author's reputation. It will only be a blazing of thy own shame. And then thou wilt see thyself so unhappy as to have hit the mark at which thou didst not aim. For without doing him any hurt, who is far above thy reach, thy tongue falls upon thy head, and in striking at one whom thou canst not wound, thy sword redounds back upon thyself, and enters into thine own bowels. But if thou remainest a man of impersuasion, and takest so much pleasure in publishing thine own shame, I cannot help it. It is sufficient for me to have warned thee of thy hazard. Nor shall I endeavor henceforth to deprive the world of their liberty, since thou wilt have it so, to look upon thee according to the character which thou given of thyself, and that is, deist ali quid in tus, to make thee a man and a Christian. And since this brutish shape pleases thee, thou mayest go eat grass, and let alone this bread, which is only designed for children. And so I leave thee to make use of that liberty, of saying what thou pleases, which thou hast now purchased, with the loss of thy own reputation. If any think it had been more convenient to have concealed the names of those to whom the author wrote, for some reasons obvious, in regard of the present lamentable posture of affairs, when it is almost sufficient to make a man guilty that ever he was really zealous for God, I have only this to say for myself, that I designed their honor and not their prejudice or hurt in prefixing their names. Neither can I well imagine, whatever others may apprehend, what prejudice they can sustain by this, since none or very few of them come from the author as returns to anything they had written to him. And there being no law either discharging him to write or any persons to receive his letters, there can be no transgression upon their part, and so nothing to ground a prejudice or sound a rational plea against them, and much less in that their names are prefixed. Or if there be anything in this blameworthy, I alone am in the transgression, who have done it without consulting themselves or asking their consent. Yet, in order to the satisfaction of any who may be offended at what is done, I have this to say for myself further, that I was introduced to it. One, that thereby it might appear these were indeed the very letters which that faithful sufferer and witness of Jesus Christ wrote, though there is sufficient in the style and strain to put this beyond debate, and no forgeries.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail-order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's Edmonton, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle is adopted by the Papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the Papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."